Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
Brave Q.
I never get the European ones or Australian ones right in terms of times and difference. I always have to look it up.
That was a nice ditty. Is that your phone?
Yeah. That's the alarm I set to let me know that if I'm at my computer and I'm not on Polycast, I should be on Polycast. Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 202. This is the Mean Team, and I am joined by my regular co-hosts, Dan Q.
This episode number's got it going on forward and backward.
Makalua.
Are you seeing his junk in the trunk and junk in the front?
The abstract conceptual possibility of Majin.
Thanks.
And guest co-host Joe.
Hello.
Got a handful of hands-on previews of Beyond Earth. Which one do you want to start with, Mikey?
Cargo one seems to have a little more detail, actually. Well, we know the names of two of the leaders now, and we know there's also the People's African Union, and that thing about the American Reclamation Corporation. Yeah, an American corporation that focuses on science and infrastructure and production. Now I know this is a fantasy game.
Maybe they're just trying to grasp their roots or something.
Oh. Yeah, well, lacking in cultures and religion. Well, yeah. How is this an American company again? I've been going away.
Well, doesn't it depend on what part of the United States you're talking about when it comes to religion?
Yeah, that's true.
Interesting. You have to pick station charters. Like, do you go for ones for a science think tank or for a mapping enterprise? Another one where they had to decide between some group labs or a biomechanical research. Apparently, at one point, they had to make a very topical choice on healthcare for the clinic workers they just invested in. Not trying to make it Politicast, I swear it's part of the thing.
Well, part of the reason that made totally not Alpha Centauri 1 and this being totally not Alpha Centauri 2 so interesting was you did have a bit more of an emphasis on the moral compass of stuff because it emphasized the planet versus dominating it or whatever. So I'm expecting that to be somewhat more of a theme here, and you can take any kind of choice, good or bad, as a result of it. And that is fun, but as a result, that is going to come up. I mean, you're going to be making some political choices at a level that you just don't in other SIP titles.
Also choices of how many worms would you like up against your base and trying to shoot?
Well, yeah, but that's usually a setting you pick before the game in that case. Lots of mind worms.
Yes, apparently they got to some point later on where they had the giant alien worms and they had not one, not two, but three. Yeah, all up against their city. Apparently this planet is called Mandira.
Yeah, that was just kind of dropped and not really...
I know. It's like...
stated. It's just like, whoa, back up. We have a name for planet now?
Fine. And I don't mind if they want to name it. I don't see that was necessary. But hey, yeah, Mandira works.
Now, I don't know if that's really the name for the planet or that's just the name that Tina Amini from Kotaku gave it, but I like the sound of it.
You know what, though? It might be to the player to name the planet, or the planet might be like a generated name or something, too.
No, don't let players do it.
Oh, well, I mean, it has its pluses and minuses, of course. Yeah. You might not want to join certain multiplayer games hosted by the immature, but at the same time, you can come up with interesting names for your planet. So I think it's more good than bad overall.
I'm very certain if the players have control over their planet, no one will name it after a phallus.
That will not happen.
You mean that's not the first thing it's going to get named after?
Or the backside.
Then what are you going to use for your city naming theme?
Thinking about the very typical choice on healthcare. She also makes mention of this gaseous toxin that's a new environmental hazard for the series. Ooh.
Yeah, if you land in an area that has a lot of the Miaz, then your guys are standing out there. They're going to take damage. So you might want to bring them home to base every once in a while. You know, kind of like real life.
I'm sure this game will be very much like real life. Although that'll be interesting. I wonder to what extent you can use that against the computer. You know, bait them into areas where they take quote-unquote attrition.
that say that your soldier's health will slowly deplete each turn you leave them there, from the Kotaku article. And it has been referenced in some of the other previews that if you end up adopting the Harmony affinity, that you can actually not only prevent your soldiers from being injured by this toxin, but it can be used as a healing property and even be able to spread miasma to tiles that didn't otherwise have it, or tiles that had it removed later on. So it sounds like there's some very fluid possibilities there with that.
So it's going to be like fungus from Alpha Centauri. You get to certain technology levels, it's great for you to have fungus around your base, but it still annoys everyone else. You could build a version of their missiles that could actually spread fungus. That was always fun.
Yes, it was.
I enjoyed the comment from Tina when she mentioned this quest system, which Dennis Shirk on episode 200 from Firaxis Games, the one thing that he said was there really hadn't been a lot said about the new quest system, and tried to make it quite distinct from how we saw quests before in Civilization 4. And so I'm like, oh, there's finally talk of the quest system. Eventually I found a resource pod which set off a new mission quest. Find 3 more resource pods. Okay. That was a little underwhelming, but...
Bring me 8 boar livers.
I read that and I'm like, so is that like finding a ruin and then it reveals more of the map that reveals more ruins? I just had this instant.
Well, it's like the pods that were scattered about in Alpha Centauri. That's actually not a bad thing. Most of them were pretty good. I don't think you had a map.
Tina had said that she had spent 40 turns with this hands-on preview of Civilization Beyond Earth, and in those 40 turns, spent about 30 to 45 minutes with it. And I know it's early on in the game, but I'm thinking, man, those are really fast turns when really first-time hands-on preview. I would have expected the time being longer, like the turns being longer, because you're trying to get yourself oriented.
I don't know about that, actually. Like, you could just be casually playing through and not thinking about every choice you make so hard, just to see more of the gameplay content. As, you know, as the game progresses, you get to see different mechanics and features.
I mean, if she was on a timeline, if they said you got 60 minutes to get through this or something like that, oh, okay, then I'd understand you not wanting to stop and smell the roses.
Well, let's be honest here. You always have some degree of time limit. So unless you're trying to make a serious strategic playthrough, I mean, there's something to be said for just going through the game and enjoying it without thinking too much, especially your first couple runs. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. You can enjoy the game stopping and planning out your every move, too. But some people might choose not to play that way. That's fine.
In the first few games I played of Civ 4, I was too busy exploring things and looking at the different things on the map, going, ooh, shiny, shiny, shiny. You know, not really being in-depth of, oh, let me analyze why this thing is here.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know, Mackie invoking shiny to support this argument. It's just, I don't know. I said you could borrow the word, Mackie, not abuse it. No, I'm kidding.
If I start abusing the word, you'll know.
I would say for me, the Kotaku article was about middle of the road in terms of combination of new information and writing style.
I don't think the other ones give as much things that we didn't already know about. Like, yeah, I know this. Tech Tree's a tech web, yes.
I would say that other than the Kotaku article, the OS Gamers, and in particular the Destructoid articles, were lacking in terms of excitement factor, to be honest. The Destructoid made mention of that he started out in an area called the Lush Biome. I thought, okay, so what's that like, legendary start? I don't know. An inference. He does talk about that the massive siege words were drilling underground and then coming up to attack my base. And I thought, oh, you've got to think 3D, just like Khan forgot to do with Kirk. And I'm completely nerding out now, aren't I?
No, that's okay. It's Wrath of Khan. You're allowed to nerd out about that one.
Steve Farrelly for OS Gamers says, it's very much Civilization in space, and of course it's a spiritual successor to Alpha Centauri as a result, but it's also working to craft its own place among both namesakes. I always enjoyed it. It actually makes me think of my own life when my parents would say, you know, there was a time, Dan, when people would say, oh, Dan is your son, and then it said as you got older, it was, oh, you're Dan's mother or Dan's father. So in other words, their identity was tied to me as opposed to my identity being tied to theirs. So I think that's what Steve's getting at here, where Beyond Earth just doesn't want to be what it is relative to Civilization and Alpha Centauri. And I think that's fair. And based on some of the descriptions we've gotten here, yeah, it is trying to borrow a little from each and then make it its own.
The one-thirds formula?
Exactly.
Some old, some new, some better.
I'm going to save the one that I think is the best for last. But the second best was actually, I thought, from PC World, from Hayden Digman.
Just for the title, right? Beyond Earth isn't Alpha Centauri 2, but it totally is.
Totally not Alpha Centauri 2, no.
Nope, totally is.
His comment that if Alpha Centauri was Sid Meier and Company making Civilization 2 in space, Beyond Earth is Sid Meier and Company making Civilization 5 in space.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the comparison. You want to compare somebody to something. You know, we're talking about something new, compare it to a like thing, although I think that's a bit of an oversimplification, but I'll let it pass. She liked the additional description of the technology web.
Mm.
He tried to describe it a little more in general terms, which was technologies towards the center are grounded in near future developments or even current fields. But you expand towards the fringes of the very large web and you'll find speculative technology in the realms of science fiction. And additionally, each technology on the web is accompanied by sub-technologies, giving you more room to specialize in a given field. I like that comparison, and that, of course, makes me think of the television series Fringe. Also in the PC World article, and I'm going to direct this to Mackie because I would say, and admittedly, Joe, I don't know you as well as my fellow regular co-host, but I think Mackie is probably more excited for this than anybody else on the call because of how much she loved and still loves Alpha Centauri.
Mm-hmm. That's not the coffee talking with the nodding. Oh, sorry, Internet. You can't see me nodding.
Where in the article it says, where Civilization 5 has neutral tribes and independent city-states on the map, Beyond Earth has roaming alien life forms. And I like that comparison. But then, as a Civilization veteran, your first instinct may be, I have to kill all these organisms. But he acknowledges that this was a mistake, that they're not automatically hostile, and were utterly destroyed and overwhelmed your troops with sheer numbers in the early game. I'm thinking, oh, it's like raging barbarians. Okay.
Raging mindworms.
And he concludes his article, interestingly enough, by saying, I expect you already know whether this type of game will appeal to you. So I don't know if he's talking strategy in general, if he's talking strategy in space. I'm not exactly sure where he was trying to go with that. The best hands-on preview, which was more detailed than the other four combined, was the one on GameCrate off of Newegg's website. When he said Civilization Beyond Earth hands-on details galore, yeah, he was not kidding. Of course, he did have to brag in the preface about how many words his preview was, but I thought, okay, his comment that Beyond Earth is to Civilization as XCOM Enemy Unknown is to the original XCOM. Ooh, that's the first time I've seen in preview anyone compare Beyond Earth to XCOM other than, will there be XCOM units in Beyond Earth?
No, we covered that. XCOM 2 will be invading the new Beyond Earth world.
Oh, that's right. You got Fraxis to indirectly admit to that on episode 200.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Yeah, it's been covered. But I don't know if that comparison is fair, because XCOM, the new one, is a rethinking of the old XCOM, and they changed it. So I don't think Beyond Earth would compare the exact same way to Civ 5. Be like saying that Beyond Earth is going to be almost nothing like Civ 5, but they changed some stuff. If you're going to make that comparison, then you'd say like Beyond Earth is like XCOM is to the old XCOM, but versus Alpha Centauri, direct comparisons are better than bad comparisons.
That's true. Nick Skybetta, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. And if not, well, join the long tradition of this show of us not saying names correctly. He notes that unique units and buildings are one feature from past Civ games that won't be showing up in Beyond Earth. Because according to Pete Murray, marketing associate at Firaxis, these elements, what they had served in the past, are covered by the different systems in Beyond Earth. And there are also no great people in Beyond Earth.
No.
Making reference to that the orbital layer system is essentially the in-game functionality of great people. Where, for example, military satellites provide area bonuses previously found on great generals.
Oh, so you have satellite reconnaissance of that area, so you have a bonus to hit. In other words, you're targeting them to nuke them for morphics.
Thank you, Gandhi. Wait, he's not on Earth.
Gandhi never ran into face-hugging aliens, so.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if in 24 hours of Beyond Earth's release, there's a mod that adds Gandhi into this game. And the comparisons to Civ 5 don't stop there. Well, Civ in general, in some respects. I mean, we're talking about great people, Civilization 4 and Civilization 5. City-states are gone in Beyond Earth. So they arrive in Civilization 5, and they're right out the door again. Aw, too bad. But apparently, much of the role that they played in Civ 5 is now the domain of stations. These are independent businesses that take up a single tile. I enjoy his comment about, no more city-states hogging the best territory. Hooray!
Woo!
Mm-hmm. Now you have stations hugging the best territory.
Yeah, they're only one tile. They're only one tile.
Yeah, but watch them hug the one tile that's like a natural wonder. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, never mind. Apparently they established themselves throughout the map over the early stages of the game. And then he goes into more detail, which I thought was an interesting hybrid combination here. Stations offer opportunities for trade of particular kinds of resources and bonuses. For those stations closest to your first cities, yeah, that's plural, you'll often have a chance to choose which type of station they will be, so you'll be able to tailor them to your interests and playstyle somewhat. Your active trade routes aren't unlimited, however, and stations will only trade with one civilization at a time, and they may become less friendly towards you if you neglect them for too long. So I guess that's kind of like, oh, you haven't given us gold in a while since the city-state or completed a quest for us, so...
You slashed our funding. How do you expect us to do the thing you wanted to do? You wanted to have this map? You're going to have to give us funding, dude.
It's also mentioned again about the delay in arrival of your rival civilizations. Wow, arrival and rival in the same sentence. Ouch. And it actually made me think of, what mod was that for Civilization 4? I think that was Rise and Fall.
Oh, yeah, where the different civilizations popped up at the appropriate historical time. So if you wanted to play somebody who was way down, you actually had to let the game sit there and churn until you got to that zoo.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that always works.
I hope you didn't want to play America.
America. Do you get to start with the whole thing? No, because it's a random map. So how much land are you actually going to get?
Oh, and an option that you can turn on or off.
Oh.
So I guess you could actually have it so rival civilizations start at the same time as you. Oh, okay.
As the example was, this might seem like a small change. In practice, it can throw a major wrench into your plans to have a new neighbor suddenly appear right next to some juicy resources you were planning on claiming yourself.
I don't know, maybe playing with that option is a measure of trying to move up in difficulty level without actually formally moving up in difficulty level.
Mm-hmm.
Although they really haven't talked about difficulty levels yet, so there's still the opportunity for pre-settler. Yes!
What, pre-space?
Well, no, you're still settling. Man, don't be so earthist, Mackie.
I was trying to be pro-spacist, but whatever.
It also talks about technological research that features both STEM and LEAF technologies. Well, fair analogy. Branching, web, STEM, LEAF.
Mm-hmm.
STEM techs represent the first level of a given area of research, and then LEAF techs provide more advanced exploration of that same field, and only the STEM techs are necessary to advance further in the web. So I think this gets to, oh, no more bottleneck issues. Hooray! Although we kind of knew that before, but it's nice to see that reaffirmed.
Yeah, like you can, you know, from the way he's describing it, I want to go more with a trunk and branch analogy. Like there's a main trunk to that particular area of research, but there's all sorts of different branches off. Like he's talking about synthetic thought, and you can go all the way down to swarm intelligence, or you can keep going upwards towards the stuff that, as you put earlier, was the fringe technology.
And there are also, quote, lateral connections between techs that allow several different ways to progress.
So we will not be bottlenecked. You must research this before you research that.
Well, there is the starting area, I'm sure, is slightly more obvious. Like, you need to research this to walk around the planet or shoot things on the planet or
lasers,
you know,
pew pew,
stuff like that. I'm sure you're going to be shoehorned into a couple minor choices, but after that, they keep making it sound is like you can pretty much go where you want.
I said this vision of technology number one. Do you want to shoot things? Yes.
Woo.
Technology number two. Do you want to shoot things with accuracy? Yes!
Tech 3, would you like things to burn when you shoot them?
Oh, yeah.
No. Technology 3, would you like your weapons to inflict damage when you shoot effectively? Yes!
Tons of damage.
Oh, man, I'm trolling this so hard. And I'm not sorry.
To divert slightly for a second, I have to point out there's a screenshot in here that shows some of the resources, and apparently one of the names of the resources is Phyrexite.
Sure, why not?
That Phyrexite is later explained that between that and there's floatstone and another type of resource that can only be fully realized depending upon a given affinity.
Oh, so which one is Phyrexite for, I wonder?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Supremacy.
Ooh.
Yep, Phyrexite, Supremacy, Floatstone, Purity, and for Harmony, Xenomass.
We'll be hunting down Xenomass then.
We mentioned Star Trek earlier. By the way, the color associated with Supremacy is gold. So like Command Structure gold from the original series. Love it. I approve. Surprise, surprise. Also talks about in the Game Crate article that as you make your way through the game, you'll begin leveling up in different affinities based on your decisions. And it's entirely possible to have levels in more than one. While dedicating yourself to a single affinity at the expense of the other two will likely be a good way to advance in particular areas, it is also very possible that spreading your focus between different paths could be a viable tactic as well, particularly if you're heading for a domination or contact victory, and of course those are the two of the five victory conditions that are not tied to a specific affinity. So I thought, oh, so it's like trying to make a decision between how many social policies am I going to adopt and when, and which ones, and how far down do I go into to compare against Civ 5.
And it's not so easy to switch your affinities because you're piling up points the whole time. There's still a point in the game where you theoretically can choose any of them, but after a certain point, you're going to have to go to get to your end game for that affinity. You have to go deep in that one.
And then lastly, in the Game Crate article, virtues. You unlock virtues through the advancements of your overall culture, and they provide bonuses in one of four areas: might, knowledge, prosperity, and industry. They start off small, but can be quite dramatic at higher levels, offering civilization-wide bonuses to production or research for players who dedicate themselves to particular virtues or who branch out as much as possible. When combined with the affinities, virtues provide strategic flexibility. So I'm like, oh, kind of like how we have the combination of social policies and ideologies now with the Brave New World expansion pack for Civ 5. And now for people who might be listening or not listening and they're like, is there a too long didn't listen summary of all this stuff for Beyond Earth? Here we go. Resource pods approximate ruins. Engineers are not equivalent to scouts. Workers, like workers and engineers. Affinities are not so much like religion, social policy, and governments, but more like civics. Virtues approximate social policies. Stations approximate city-states. And barbarians are not equal to alien life. And oh my gosh.
Because the alien life is better.
Man, oh man, comparing alien life to barbarians, that got some people going.
The aliens are going to show you how barbarian you are.
Civilization Online Beta First Look. There was a 1 week test, a closed beta test for Civilization Online from Korean game developer XL Games. There were three parts, published on the 28th, the 30th of May, and then the last on the 4th of June. This person, playing the game, look at the screenshots and any of the videos, everything is in Korean. He said at the outset that he really wasn't interested, because he thought it was just going to be one of those massively multiplayer online role-playing games where you just build random stuff. But to my surprise, I ended up playing throughout the whole first night of the test, and I thought, well, that sounds like people playing a new Civilization game.
Holy crap, what is that like coming through the window? Oh, God.
He also tried to explain the genre. A lot of people are often confused when they hear Civilization Online, especially if you've played the previous installments, unquote. He says that this version leans towards more a third-person, real-time strategy game with realm versus realm mechanics. Pretend you're playing Warcraft or Age of Empires, and each unit represents a player. And I'm like, okay. Now, it has been previously disclosed that as a player, you take on the role of an individual character as opposed to you controlling an entire civilization. Although for some reason, Steppero kept referring to civilizations as factions. And of course, I'm right back to Alpha Centauri. Anyway, Rome, China, and Egypt were playable. I believe the fourth one expected at launch, Aztecs, but they were disabled for this test for whatever reason. He says, like previous Civ titles, you get the passage has felt as time because you can progress through different eras. He said that the game isn't that complex and is very easy to adapt to. And of course, this whole time I'm thinking so long as you can read the language of the game, but yeah.
Yeah. Google Translate, help me.
That works really well in a real Don't attack me, I'm translating. Come on, don't be a jerk.
No, you gotta build it into the game so it has those awful, like, completely context messed up messages all the time in the game. Although it would probably be doing a pretty good job with, like, the one word menu items, I would guess. It's only when you form sentences that it gets really bad.
For him, however, he said that the best part of the game is destroying and pillaging the enemy town halls and villages. And that he was hoping that with all the gold he seized, that he would spend the next day teching and upgrading his faction's infrastructure unless he got suckered into another realm versus realm battle. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, so this raises the question, yes, you can build if you want to, but I'm instantly getting these comparisons to Civilization Revolution in my mind, which is as much as you can build, focusing too much on that at the expense of warfare is at your extreme peril. But anyway, he thinks it has an interesting concept. He's enjoying it a lot because it's new. And he does say that you can focus on other things like building tower defenses, etc., if you don't enjoy player versus player. But based on this part and the other parts, I really think that's what it's going to come down to be honest. at the very least, you're going to need other people on your team in order to be able to defend you and enjoy the player versus player so you can sit back and do your building.
That I've quite seen something. I mean, it's got the MOBA elements. It does have some MMO elements. I don't know that I've ever seen something like that.
It's also going to have some cash buying options in there.
Well,
it
yeah,
looks
it's
like.
Probably a Korean free-to-play game. So.
You can buy the cards that boost up your character. So basically, it's going to have a similar problem as Dota 3 or Diablo 3.
Oh, yes. Although they did eventually remove the real money auction house, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, in that respect, I'm also thinking, oh, so this is going to be like what was originally Civilization Network and became Civilization World, where you could get Civ Bucks, so you could buy Civ Bucks.
Yeah.
In addition to actually getting Civ Bucks through gameplay.
Now, the real question is how much of an in-game advantage does it provide? Because it sounds like it does, which would make the game a bit more off-putting. Well, like something like the League of Legends model is pretty good, actually, because you can play that without dropping any money on it. But if you enjoy it, you can. And when it comes to direct gameplay, yeah, dropping money can make you competitive a little bit faster. But once everyone's at a certain level and you have your room set up, there's no difference between someone who hasn't spent a dime and someone who's spent hundreds in terms of in-game capability. So it depends how much this pay-to-win is in play. Whether the game will,
Well, he said, I think in the second article, probably I'm jumping ahead, but the card system, you get cards after playing, and you can probably buy cards, but you can merge some of the cards to get new stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure if you buy a bunch of cards for your character, because it's the only thing that switches from game to game is the cards. So you could probably like hype up some sort of card system, whatever. You get 3 per character for different stuff about your character and things, including battles and stuff, or build speed or stuff like that. So
we'll see how much that matters then in terms of time investment to get a setup you want by investing lots versus playing a bit more. How much more playing is required?
And from that second part, and he actually calls it a beta review as opposed to a preview. So I'm like, oh, okay. We knew that from before that your character could go from being a fighter to a builder and back again, but he also talks about that you can have multiple characters. You just can't be playing them concurrently. And the cards, you can have up to 3 cards to level up a character, and you can shift them back and forth between your characters, because he was playing Rome at one point, and then he switched to being Egypt on another day. So he didn't lock himself into one particular character, and his progress in one, in terms of the cards, he could transfer to the next one, which also meant that even though this isn't like an open, seamless world, that it's a persistent world, that you do not have to wait until the next game were to start, because it seems like that there's, you know, that there's a fixed time that these sessions would last. But as a new player, you can jump in, and essentially, if you're on a faction that has progressed, from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance, then it's kind of like an advanced start for that particular character. Now we see in Civilization to help get yourself up to speed. He talked about the construction system in Civ Online. It reminded me of, not that I've played that many real-time strategy games, but it actually reminded me of Rise of Nations. You're gathering resources like wood and stone. Once harvested, you toss it at the building, and you finish it. Once the victory conditions have been met, I'm assuming he means when one victory condition has been met, but anyway, the match session will end and you get like a mini results screen. He wishes there was more details about it, but he does honestly do a good job of saying about once or twice in every part of his preview, this is only the first beta, the first closed beta, so things are still very fluid and open to change. So he's not overly critical of anything at this point in time. He did talk about how on the second day that the servers were extremely wonky, and he thinks the developer broke something because it was a lot laggier than usual, and they had to take down the server numerous times. And this gets back to my hesitation about worlds like this, which is you are dependent on your internet connection and the server being online and the server performing well. And I can just see lag screwing you potentially over in the heat of battle, where even a little bit of latency can mean the difference between the continued life or death of your character. But, oh well, I guess as long as you know that going in, then so be it. He did say that he was still happy to test this game while being in a zombie state because it's really fun. The game started at midnight his time, every time, so he referred to it as the graveyard shift. And by the way, the game was being reset every 2 days, so they couldn't really get any farther than into the Renaissance. But maybe that they were doing that because, oh, I don't know, the gameplay experience beyond Renaissance isn't ready yet? Which would make sense, seeing as how this is the first...
Yeah, for an online game, yes, the end game's not ready.
Yeah. I liked his summary again of trying to explain Civilization Online's genre. Open world, realm versus realm, real-time strategy, massively multiplayer online role-playing game. Whew, take a breath.
How many hyphens was that again?
I don't know, maybe it's his way of saying there really is no correct label for this, that we somehow need kind of a new label that's not so convoluted. I don't know. That's kind of my inference of what he was trying to get at. I would say the third part was the least in terms of general detail that's worth going over on this show. He goes into some specific mechanics that is learn how to play the game, like you press this button to do this. Well, on our show here, we're not going to get that specific. That's far too removed. He does talk about that there are no computer-controlled or controllable units or armies in Civilization Online. This game is pure realm versus realm against players only. Every vehicle is controlled by one player, which makes the game great as it is. The only non-playable characters you will encounter in this game are shopkeepers, city town guards, and those guarding towers.
Yeah, because they have the expectation that it's PvP and they expect players in the game, not that it's meant to be, you know.
They don't expect someone to sit there and play the person owning shop.
That too.
Yeah.
Although somebody might anyways, but yeah.
That happens a lot, especially if it's lucrative in game terms in some way.
Mm. But yeah, generally they'll said there's an NPC for switching your builder. Like if you want to switch to a builder from a fighter, then there's an NPC that you go for a job change and the various jobs that show up. They don't necessarily need somebody standing around as a player for that. But even on the opposite side, you can't build an NPC army and have them come with you. Their expectation is that, you know, if you're going to go fight something, that you're going to bring other players around.
The general of a giant army.
Mm-hmm.
Sephiru concludes, the game has decent amount of replay value due to the faction free-for-all realm versus realm battle, quote-unquote. And it makes me think of, okay, looking back on the Civilization series, if we look back at the original Civilization, what are your victory conditions? Time, space, and domination. In a way, this is where Civilization Online is at. It's like if Civilization is a forest, Civilization Online is a different tree in the forest, with its own branches, completely separate. Someone does say, in response to his YouTube videos, and that's the thing, there are several YouTube videos that he captured, high definition, including one 52-minute long battle, which I got watching it and I'm like, where are the English subtitles? S. Stark said to Sephiru, as a Civilization series fan, I definitely wouldn't play this. I mean, it just isn't Civ. Civ is about managing your whole empire to achieve some kind of victory before another civilization does. This game seems to be your common target tab of MMO with some sandbox skills as being able to build things, and even when you fight or build, it isn't like a Civ game at all. Maybe people that aren't devout Civ players can enjoy this game. I even hope that someone enjoys it, actually. But honestly, I can't. And I think that's the thing. This is targeting a different group of gamers, just like Civilization World and Civilization Revolution before that. I think maybe a lot of the hesitation from people, though, even though they're not saying it, particularly from Civ fans, is, oh, Firaxis isn't doing this. And the last time a Civilization title was developed with the Civilization license by another company was the Cult of Power series from Activision, and we know that there are definitely strong opinions still in the community over how that went down.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, right now, if you don't live in Korea, then this is kind of a completely academic argument because you can't play it.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning it at this point. So I very much enjoyed this because I really felt like before this I've just got my own biases and prejudices and inferences that really don't give me a sense of the game at all. Between his written description and the videos, I'm getting a better sense of where the game is at right now. And of course, as Steparoo acknowledges in his beta review, it may look notably different by the time it's released. Right now, it's looking to be released before the end of this year, which is apparently in line with some people saying that, well, that's about the time Beyond Earth is about to come out. We will see.
That's what they say. I mean, basically, this is a game not for the strategist. This is a game that uses the name and makes a different type of game.
Civilization branded realm versus realm fighting. If you like that type of online thing.
Yeah. If you play WoW or play Diablo or stuff like that, then...
And like to look very anime while you do it.
Yeah. Then move to Korea, because that's about the only place you're going to be able to play it.
Yeah, Steparoo, by the way, for most of it was actually playing a female character. And I will say that he chose one of the more, how should I put this, realistic-looking female characters.
Less enemy, more boob.
Yeah, I was some of the female characters. I don't know how they walk around with those things, let alone fight. But.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I've heard the complaint before. I see it all the time, and I'm like, that's not realistic at all. How does that work?
There's a YouTube video regarding Civilization by Errant Signal, and apparently the premise of the channel is to look at different types of games. It points out the differences between what the games assert themselves to be versus what they actually are, and also the kinds of messages that the games send.
As a kid, I always felt I was learning something, from key scientific breakthroughs to which leaders went with which civilizations. But as an adult, I see the underlying rhetoric at play here, the assumptions baked into its metaphors, and the arguments being put forth by its mechanics. And while I still absolutely adore the game, I do so now with an understanding that it's not showing the actual patterns of history, but patterns of a specific lens through which it views history.
I was pretty interested by some of the things. Like, it points out the whole conceptualization of barbarians in the Civ games.
The mechanical point of barbarians is to spice up early gameplay and force players to keep at least a small military available, since barbarians could attack at any moment, whether or not you're at war with anyone. But that's sort of the problem. Unlike other quote-unquote civilized societies, barbarians don't obey territory boundaries and can't be reasoned with. The game paints them basically as monsters. Actually, in Alpha Centauri, the barbarian stand-ins literally are monsters in the form of terror-inducing mindworms, which provide pretty much the same purpose and underscore how dehumanized the barbarians really are. Civilization IV even goes so far as to have the barbarians share a banner with wildlife, as if to imply they're on the same side, as if they were destructive forces of nature and not really people at all. With the barbarian mechanic, Civilization effectively comes out and says that while there are many civilizations of all colors and creeds, there are still some groups of people too small or too mobile or too primitive to warrant any response but the swing of the sword or the loosing of an arrow.
A silly comparison with the flags of the barbarian animals in Civ 4 versus the barbarians in Civ 4 also had the same flag, but also how it builds up the greatness of civilization itself versus what you actually do in gameplay.
This idea that there are some peoples or social constructs below consideration as equals, or worse, the idea that some people are just quote-unquote savages and capable of anything other than conquest and destruction, doesn't really gel with the rest of the game's self-image as a celebration of all of mankind's shared history. You know, where we've been and where we're going and all that feel-good jazz the game insists it's about.
It's an interesting watch, and certainly I would agree that what you see on the box art of a Civ game is really not 100% what you necessarily do in a typical game, sure. But I'm not sure if marketing the game as nuke your enemies into winning a UN victory is really what you want to put on the box anyway, especially if you want to sell this to some of your demographic that might be off-put by that kind of thing. So, I don't know. I don't know that you could do without an Errant Signal to some degree in the Civ franchise, but certainly there are valid points.
Since joining YouTube in April 2006 has more than 50,000 subscribers and in excess of 2.5 million video views, Bomb Candy says, I think it's important to highlight that there's a stark contrast between what the game touts itself to be, a celebration of man's achievements, and what the game really projects itself to be, a series of events which serves as a means to a win state.
Yeah.
It trivializes history, and although it's an unavoidable side effect of the game mechanics, it's still present. And I'm thinking, I don't think the game is touting itself to be something that it is not. I think that's people's inference.
I wouldn't go that far, but you do get misled to some degree if you just, like, look at it versus playing it.
There, yes. That I could see, not actually playing it, not putting into context what it is being marketed as, because after all, it is a game.
Yeah.
Games need mechanics, and mechanics need to abstract some things, even though, I mean, at one point in time in game development, right, it was because, well, it's not sophisticated enough to do anything more than it's already doing, whereas I think now it's more about, is it fun?
Yeah.
And a lot of that fun is it fun to play? Would you rather be playing this game than something else, or doing something that's quote-unquote real?
Yeah.
Some game mechanics are real, but some of the history that you could do with Civilization, you could make a simulation of the history that has already passed. You can make a different change than the history that already has passed, but it's only a simulation, since real history has already passed.
Civilization posits that the state is all that is or ever was. The humans themselves are incidental. And in that, I think, we start to see the key problem I have with the game as an adult. It frames the entire history of mankind as a history of nations, not as the history of people. For example, before you even have wheels, calendars, or written language, your people have decided that they are, in fact, a unified people. Which, I mean, that's kind of a new concept, historically speaking.
It's about reimagining history and making different choices. And I think if you really want something that's more mimicking of history within civilization itself, then there are a number of historical scenarios that give you that option that essentially recreate, you know, as much as you can approximate. This is what it was like, really. Now make a decision based on the mechanics for that particular scenario, but they didn't put that in the general game because, as Phil was getting out of the introduction, they're trying to take into account the potential market here, and given the amount of time and money that's put into the game, they want to make this as accessible to people as possible. And often when you want to make it accessible to more people, then you have to take some liberties and abstractions to make it less complicated and easier to pick up and go.
Yeah. That's true.
And I think a lot of people in response to this video think that Errant Signal is ripping Civilization a new one.
I want to emphasize that I'm not hating on the game. I'm just trying to get to the core of what its mechanics and metaphor really add up to and what they say about the civilizations we live in. And what it presents, at least to me, is a peek into the mind of the state as an entity. And that view suggests that state governments are inherently dehumanizing and indifferent to suffering unless it harms them directly, narcissistic, almost to the point of solipsism, and motivated by base desires like survival, expansion, and power. And that's curious to me because civilization always billed itself as celebratory, a proud look back at all the things the collective we have accomplished across 50,000 years.
It's like, oh, social justice warrior comments on the Civilization series. Enjoy and or facepalm, said one user. I don't think it's an and or. I think it's enjoy and facepalm. And some of those facepalm moments are good because it gets you to stop and think critically about, if I'm playing Civilization and I'm enjoying Civilization, what does that say about me to other people? And if I'm thinking that way, are other Civilization players thinking that way? And if we start thinking about that and we think about the gameplay experience, then we can have an impact on how future titles in the series will look.
Civilization presents us all as being in a mad dash to be the first to be the bestest nation ever in one of a few areas. It suggests that if there is a human emotion experienced by these primal state entities that we play, it's pride. That the only time these nations look above their current need for more power is to build up and reinforce their legacy. You don't build the most culturally important city or the first trip to Alpha Centauri for the reasons that humans would do those things. You do them because it legitimizes your civilization in the eyes of other civilizations.
You know, when people first started talking about that, I realized that I am not a normal person in this regard. Like, a lot of people don't like doing evil acts in these games and don't like it when they're abstracting doing evil acts. For example, the culture conversion in EU4, nuking somebody in Civ4. Whereas, like, to me, I don't have any moral boundaries here when it comes to the game. Like, it's fun to do evil stuff in games. You can't do that otherwise, and nor would you want to. nukes yes, and slavery in real really life are horrifying, but in the game, you get to be, like, some evil overlord person if you want to be. And that can be fun. So, like, it didn't even occur to me that you would actually treat the game in any capacity like you would treat real life and be bothered by the concepts of doing extreme evils. I just assumed that they are extreme evils and we're done with it. But the concept of doing that stuff, if you try to put your real self into the game as the one making that decision, could probably bother you. But I guess not everyone looks at it that way.
Nuke them all.
People have different frames of mind when they're playing these games.
Further in response, I like Mr. Rudy Mentory. Capital on the R, capital on the M. I hate the idea of fans refusing to think critically or accept criticism about something they like. The way I see it, you have to have strong emotions for a game or other piece of media in order to think so critically about something. If someone didn't give a damn about Civ, they wouldn't make a video complaining about it. Even if the person thinks negatively about the thing they're criticizing, they still care, even if it's due to them having loved the original concept or the series. When you think about emotions, you're most likely going to hear from somebody if they are ticked off because they want to see something changed for whatever reason. But if they're happy with it, most people are like, oh, okay, that's cool. I like. Maybe they'll click the like button, but they won't make a comment and they won't send an email or send a voicemail or create a whole separate video where they're criticizing something. And as long as it's not criticism for criticism's sake, that there's something constructive in it, I mean, I don't agree with everything that Aaron Signal is trying to say here, but I think it's worthwhile to address because he's trying to get us to think not only about how some other Civilization players think about the series, but also perhaps why when you start talking about Civilization, other people that you know online or in person roll their eyes in the back of their head or slowly back away from you.
The universality and finality of the Wind States reinforces a sort of fatalist one Civ to rule them all philosophy. It presents history as a sort of Hunger Games for countries. Only one gets to take the prize as the most important civilization ever. Which, again, makes sense given the game's board and strategy game roots, but reframes every decision in history as a zero-sum game leading up to a single nation achieving some sort of insurmountable achievement that proves their inherent superiority. And first of all, proving the inherent superiority of specific nations is really troubling for a lot of obvious reasons, but it also pits civilizations in direct competition in a way they aren't, really.
There was one, however, comment that whether you had a positive reaction to this video, a negative reaction, or a middle-of-the-road reaction, because there were definitely some of those. I was going through the comments, of which there were more than 700 when I checked this video the day before the recording. Hairless Sasquatch, that's the username. I did not pick it for them. I'm not making this up. How lonely do you have to be to think of stuff like this? Well, talk about uniting against the troll. Free as a Car says, it's more a matter of curiosity, and almost ironically, you could say the same thing of the many great works of mankind that are featured in Civ. How lonely do you have to be to achieve greatness? That's not a response that I would give. I thought that's taking Hairless too seriously. Seth Weber says, yeah, fuck critical thinking. Why do people even waste their time trying to expand their mind and knowledge? It's so stupid. My response is, how bored do you have to be to care whether or not other people care about this? It just comes across to me as someone who is not interested in playing Civ. Well, I could be wrong about that, but I don't think it's how lonely do you have to be to think about stuff like this. I think it's maybe how involved in civilization do you have to be to think about stuff like this? I would say pretty involved, that you have a connection to the game. You feel strongly enough about it that you're getting enough out of the experience to continue playing it, and at the same time, you see how it should be improved, or it could be improved, and you want to express that in a way that gets other people to say, yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Let's start talking about it, and maybe we can come up with a suggestion on how to improve it, at least improve from our perspective. I mean, you could take or leave what he said. I thought what he said was well said. I don't agree with everything, but I don't have to agree with everything he's saying to give it credit.
Civilization's roots and influences are in games where states fight states. Microprose and Fraxis just take that pattern and extrapolate it backwards onto all of history, whether it makes sense or not. This is why you have a centralized government with a single treasury, a research agenda, major public works projects, and all cities working towards a common goal, often before you've discovered writing. No part of civilization exists for its own sake. Everything exists as a means of harming, manipulating, or defending yourself from the other civilizations. That's elegant and beautiful from the perspective of designing a board-like computer game that plays really well, but it utterly dehumanizes the country you're playing as.
There was actually a related video that he published last October, Aaron Signal, which was Keep Your Politics Out of My Video Games.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
There's certainly something to be said about the assumptions that a civilization builds into its simulations. Look at its win states and what they value. Technological progress, military conquest, economic superiority, and cultural domination. You don't win by eliminating hunger, or poverty, or by nuclear deproliferation, or by having a particularly high standard of living. You get it for lack of a better way to phrase this, very American goals. Winning the space race? Becoming a recognized world leader at the UN? Having a giant, shiny army that can easily crush other civs? Cultural domination by so-called great works that get exported to the world? Civilization values what the culture that created it values, and while the game doesn't set out to be a political statement, the way it systemized the world certainly presents one.
Now, that video's got over 85,000 views, and it's got a ratio of about 6 likes to every dislike, whereas this video on Civilization, with about 27,000 views last I checked, had a ratio of 5 likes to every dislike.
Civilization isn't a game about cultural, financial, and military imperialism. It's just telling the story of man throughout time, as it's always been.
And then, with a couple of screenshots, he goes, Conquest is rewarded with cities. Woo! And puppet governments, forced annexation, and the raising of cities. No imperialism here. But I think that's just it. He said it right in the start. Civilization is a game.
Well, yeah.
I think a game like Civ, it deserves to be spoken of critically, for better and worse, but that's just the thing. It is a game. So at some point, you need to keep either your outrage over the response to the video or even your fanboyism in perspective. A couple of audio treats from other sources with relevance to Civilization, and in turn, Polycast. In December 2006, the 15th episode of science fiction television series Stargate Atlantis' third season was first broadcast. Entitled The Game, this story finds the characters discovering a planet that fits the description of the competitive video game that two of them had been playing, only it was more than that. Previously released in pieces throughout Polycast's first season, they have been compiled together for the first time now.
The map was of a fictional civilization as part of a simulated world.
Sweet. Yeah, what you do is you take these countries that are already in a database, and you assume control of them.
Two societies separated by a river straight down the middle. Shepard took one country, I took the other.
But this is no ordinary game. I mean, it is incredibly challenging, instructional. I mean, the sheer number of options built into it, staggering.
How does one play it?
You have to figure out the best way to run your country.
Yeah, you build roads, you establish laws, mold it to your own specific ideology. You can control everything. Proper sanitation systems, water delivery.
Transportation.
So how do you win this game?
It's not really about winning.
It's more about whose society outshines the others. I mean, who creates a better infrastructure? Who's better at trade? What? Hey, don't start. I tried to negotiate with you.
Making a list of demands and not getting anything in return is not negotiating.
I offered you an entire crop of beans.
I don't need beans any longer.
Oh, right. To build defensive fortifications for your army, which he doubled in size, by the way. Surprise, surprise.
I only did that after you started cheating.
I did not cheat.
So much power at one's fingertips.
It's amazing the attraction of this game.
So, what are you starting?
Well, not as of yet, but if they don't change their approach to agriculture, it won't be too long before many of their people go hungry.
The fascinating thing is that there is a large piece of fertile soil in the south of the country that would be ideal for tuber cultivation, you know?
Sorry.
Tuber? Tuber, yeah, tuber. It is indigenous to the planet. It's like a potato.
I've done everything I could to achieve peace with you.
Really? Such as?
I send gifts of goodwill.
You sent crates. A citrus fruit. Citrus! Do you have any idea what an insult that is to my people?
Didn't used to be.
The only insult has been your unwillingness to compromise in any trade negotiation. Instead, you choose to increase the size of your army.
You built an army, too.
Only in response to your aggression.
My aggression? You dig a mine beneath our border to steal our coal, and you have the nerve to talk about aggression.
We're not stealing
you
your coal.
You crossed into our land.
What do you need it for anyway? It's not like you know the first thing about what to do with it.
His people are digging a mine across the border into Holona.
the coal resources straddle the border between my country and his?
Oh, barely. They go 3 miles into my country, which your people are happily tunneling into.
It has been a point of contention between us, okay? But it is just a difference in cartographic interpretation. Tomato, tomato.
No, no, it's pretty clear cut. You entered illegally into my country.
Gentlemen, you gave me no choice. You refused to negotiate.
Oh, you mean give in?
What do you care anyway? It's not like your people are going to use the coal.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You needed to power your medieval steam engine.
What are you talking about? It's a perfectly feasible request. Oh, yeah, perfectly reasonable. I give you all of my food and my people's stock.
I am not answerable to me.
All your food requests. I did say that we would make a deal. A deal. Oh, yeah. Baskets. Big baskets. 2 dozen of them, hand-woven and very nice.
Oh, very nice. What am I going to put in?
Huh? Certainly not food. You know what? I think you're holding out on me. I think you have plenty of food.
Are you calling me a liar?
No, I think you're trying to squeeze me for a better deal. That's what I think.
I have got nothing to hide. Now,
okay, so maybe I'll get some of my army troops down and we'll have them.
You mean none of this was real?
No one was hurt. No one was killed. It was just part of the simulation.
Called a truce yet?
Yeah. Sure, okay.
Yeah, don't worry, we're going to stick to chess from now on.
Besides, Randy doesn't cheat.
Oh, please, like I need to cheat playing you.
Here is a condensed version of a song that, as gamers, Civilization players can relate to. It's Just One More Game by Bryseye, published September 19th, 2011.
Tells me it's time to sleep, says I could use some rest. One more game, just one more game. I only need to play just one more game, just one more game. I only need to play just one more game and I'll be done. It has been a lot of fun, and all I really need is one more game. Just one more game. Game. And before I drift away, I say my prayers, thanking God for all my fans and my haters. Just one more game, just one more game. I only need to play just one more game, just one more game. I only need to play just one more game and I'll be done. It has been a lot of fun, and all I really need, and all I really need, and all I really need is one more game. Just one more game.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about a budget on Polycast because what's a budget?
I'm still demanding a 10% raise next year, though, just so you know. Not
I'm sure Dan can afford that, lol.
Easily.
Fella, if I give you a 5% raise right now, will you shut up about it?
No.
Oh, then screw you.
Can you feel the love in the room, listeners?
Cue Elton John. No, let's not do that.
Thank you, listeners, again for joining us for episode 202 of Polycast. I'm Michael Lua, as usual. Somebody is death keyboard typing. Yeah, speaking of, I was talking about my regular co-host, Mad Jim the Death Typer. Here, Mike, why did you pick this up?
It's new, it's shiny.
And me and Jim.
You want to be my border neighbor? It'll be fun.
Dan Quick.
Never out of beta.
and our guest today, Joe.
Hello.
Record date June 7th, 2014. Civilization Online Beta Clips, copyright Stepperoo. Aaron Signal Clips, copyright Aaron Signal. Stargate Atlantis Clips, copyright MGM Television. Just One More Game Clip, copyright Brian Bryce I. Simon. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.